Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the program. Chuck Morse here hosting Chuck Morse Podcast. And we are awaiting the arrival of my guest. That is a journalist, author, Lorne Day. He's the author of America's War on God. He says here in the footnotes at the Amazon page, America is in big trouble for its growing acceptance of things that are contrary to God's word, the Bible. It is no mystery that America's problems have increased in direct proportion to its steady abandonment of the Judeo-Christian God, the Bible, and biblical principles. America's war on God goes to the heart of the issue of what's wrong in today's America and ignores political correctness to tell what the solution is, or to offer a solution, I should say. It gives compelling reasons for the reader to turn to the Bible's God, the same God and Bible that America has looked to for generations and has led to America becoming the greatest nation on earth. America is now metaphorically standing at a precipice. People don't wake up and act soon. A once great nation will surely fall into the abyss of history where other godless nations have gone before. And we are joined by my guest. Thanks for joining me. Thank you, Lorne. How are you?
I'm doing well, Chuck. How are you doing this morning?
Good. Listen, give me a thumbnail with regard to your book. I mean, you say some things here that are not startling to me as a conservative, but might surprise some of our more liberal audience, and that is that we are entering into an abyss due to our backing away from the Bible.
Yes. I know it's. I know this assertion is contested by people on the left and many non-Christians. But I believe that there is a lot of evidence to show that America was indeed founded as a Christian nation. I think one of the most powerful evidences that I have seen are the original founding charters of the original 13 colonies. Excuse me. And all of them contain language such as it was the purpose of the colony to promote the gospel of Jesus Christ or the God of the Bible or other typical language was used. And that's how the original colonies were founded. And I believe that sentiment pretty much ran pretty strongly, I think, you know, up into the time that our founding fathers began to draft the founding documents, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. I believe there's other evidence, too, such as the Great Awakening that took place in starting about 1735 that also led to many of our founders being Christians or heavily influenced by the Judeo-Christian morals of the Bible.
There's certainly no question that we are based upon the Judeo-Christian code of ethics and morals. That's quite clear, and it's fairly explicit in the Declaration of Independence. There was also a clear attempt on the federal level to not have a state religion, but that doesn't mean that we don't have faith. I mean, every American president from Washington, even up till today, and with Obama, has at least made mouthed words that indicate that they seek God's blessing for America. I mean, Obama himself ends his speech by saying, God bless America. Now, you and I may know that he doesn't really mean it, but he does say it, and when he does, he is speaking as the president, and he is engaging in a blessing and a prayer to God. And the God that he's praying to, personally or not, is the same God that every president has prayed to, and that's the God of the Bible, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So, you know, I mean, I think that clearly our nation is based upon the Judeo-Christian themes. I mean, one theme in particular that I think is striking is in the Declaration of Independence, and that is that all men are created equal. That's in the Bible. That's the book of Genesis. It says that God created men and women in his image, that we are all equal under the law, that we're all spiritually equal, we're all born equal, we all die equal. And that's a very different idea than that which is held by the atheistic left, which believes that we're nothing more than evolving animals. So this principle, and the other principle, which is that rights come from the creator, not from the state. These are radical ideas that are in the manifestation of thousands of years of working toward a biblical society. Rights are not made up. They're not created by a clique of so-called enlightened people, but they are immutable, that they are beyond the reach of human manipulation. They are given by God, who is the original sovereign.
Yeah, they're not merely concoctions of man.
Exactly.
In our consciences, which is the unwritten law of God written on our hearts, is a testimony to that. Excuse me. Because we all have a sense of right and wrong that we're born with, as well as many other ideas about how we should conduct ourselves. And those things didn't come by purely random material processes.
That's right. I mean, it's, these are things that exist in nature, and nature's God, as Jefferson said. And so, when we talk about moving away from God, we're moving, I think, toward this idea that the state or this elite group of people operating in the name of the state are the originators of law and are the originators of rights. And one of the things that made us unique and one of the things that made the original Israelite nation unique was this idea that we didn't, we were stepping away from that as a form of idol worship. We were saying Jesus, when he stood up to Pontius Pilate, as Pilate said, "Who do you answer to?" He said, "I answer to a higher authority. I don't answer to you." He was representing the secular power of Rome. And within an hour of that statement, Jesus was crucified. So, whether you're Christian or not, he was the first individual to stand up to the power of the state. And that is what the United States, the whole credo of our nation is all about.
Yeah, because that's what our founding fathers did when they stood up against what they perceived as the tyranny that was being foisted upon them by England.
Exactly. So yet you say that we have strayed from that idea. Your book, America's War on God, gets into how these ideas have been frittered away and obscured by a growing clique of people in the United States who make up what we euphemistically call the Eastern Seaboard liberal establishment. Talk a little bit about how that happened.
Well, I think that my opinion is that the natural process of everything, including nations and human beings, is that it's kind of follows along the scientific law of the second law of thermodynamics. And that is that things tend to run down. America was started as a Judeo-Christian nation, a very moral nation. Of course, not everyone in the country was moral, but those were the ideals that people aspired to. And over time, that has been eroded. And I particularly think that the age that we currently live in, I think that erosion began, I think, after World War II, because after World War II, America in particular experienced a time of unequaled material prosperity. And I think with that prosperity came a lot of time that people had on their hands to do other things besides making a living, whether it was growing food or whether it was working in a factory. And I think what happened was people started to just think about the morals of their parents, the ethics of their parents, and the people that came before them. And I think that they just decided they wanted to not follow those particular things. And we saw that, especially happen in the 1960s. It kind of began in earnest. And I think it's gone just downhill from there, where things that were once abhorred and not even spoken about, things like homosexuality, those things are now accepted and even celebrated in many parts of America. And of course, the move is on by those groups of people to make things like that, lifestyles like that, completely accepted by everyone. When just a few decades before, those things were still thought to be wrong and something that you shouldn't do or participate in.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, you make some very valid points in that today, in today's world, we are almost told that people who believe in the God of our founding fathers, who were mostly devout Christians, that we're crazy, that there's something wrong with us, that there's something, you know, we're following some kind of a superstition. And this has been something, an assault on conventional faith that's been going on for a long time. I think that it's part of an agenda that seeks to undermine God, as there has been an aspect of this cult since the beginning. I mean, this goes back to the serpent in the Garden of Eden. You can be like God.
Sure.
You know, you can overthrow God in heaven and basically replace God with rule by man. And that, you know, it's an alluring idea. You know, people get, you know, kind of wrapped up in it because they feel very empowered, this idea that they can change human nature. They can even change reality, that everything is just made up. These are all, Marx called it false consciousness. And that, and thus they have a war on institutions that not only are natural and inherent, but that promote individual freedom and faith. Those institutions include the family, the conventional family, love, marriage, you know, fidelity, loyalty, private property, the right to trade goods and services and ideas. You know, all of these things, institutions of learning, where there's actually a process of people learning how to think on their own and critically. You know, these are all ideas and things that are under assault today, and that they're being replaced by this relative idea that everything is whatever you want it to be. You know, there is no such thing as an objective code of faith. And that's why faith is being attacked, because faith in God, the Judeo-Christian idea, is that God gave the world a set of ideals and a set of laws and a set of moral codes and ethics that they can live by, not necessarily achieve. No one does, because we're all imperfect beings. We're not God, so we are all sinners. But that we can look to as a measure for our lives. We can hold our lives up to it, see where we failed. Doesn't mean that sin it can be outlawed. I mean, it can't. But we can know what we know. We can know what's up. We can know what's down. We can know what's right. We can know what's wrong. And they want to get rid of that.
Well, we live in a society. Yeah, we live in a society today where you mentioned moralistic relativism. We live in a society today where it's taught that there are no absolutes. Of course, the people that assert that also assert that the theory of evolution is an absolute, which is preposterous.
Right.
But what my book seeks to do is it seeks to show evidence, first of all, that the Bible is most likely from our Creator, and that it's only His opinion about things that really matter. And the book builds on that and goes from there. And it actually has a chapter that talks about God versus evolution, and big topics of debate today. My book does it in kind of a succinct manner, but I think it has some very good points in there to distrust the theory of evolution, and I think the Bible itself has many more evidences that it is of supernatural origins than our world came from purely random material processes, and my book seeks to talk about both of those particular issues.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because first of all, we should note that the theory of evolution is just a theory. It is not.
Well, it was originally promoted as just a theory. Unfortunately, today the humanists have turned it into absolute, undisputable fact, which is just ridiculous. And my book points right. out some of the major problems with the theory of evolution.
Oh, it's very easy to disprove it. It's absurd, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, even Darwin himself said that there would have to be some kind of fossil evidence at some point to prove that there had been a missing link. And after 150 years of huge efforts, they haven't found any evidence that there's ever been a transitory species or that any of the species have changed appreciably other than just adapting to, you know, environmental considerations over time. And the idea that we emerged from what Darwin called the warm, small pond, that this is fantastical, that something is, if you look at the eye of a bee under a microscope, it has millions of facets and colors, all perfectly shaped. The fact that that even, let alone the human being, a complex person, could evolve out of a just, you know, random crashing together of matter is obviously absurd. And yet they hold this up, as you say, as the very central tenet of their faith. It was the number one tenet of the Humanist Manifesto, which was published in the 1930s. And I think the reason why they do that is because the idea of the evolving animal, who is not created equal, but who is on different rungs of the evolutionary chain, that it first of all turns man into an animal so he can be manipulated like a human, what they call a human resource, as opposed to you know, an image of God that where every single life is unique and is central and precious. And then that it allows them, as the so-called enlightened ones, the illuminated ones, to come out and offer their services and the use of the state to force their services to literally change that nature. You know, that to use, you know, this is the whole liberal idea of eugenics, which emerged in the 1920s, and it was opposed by people like us, people of faith. It was opposed by the same people that oppose abortion today. This was the great social experiment of the Nazi socialists. You know, they were leftists, we should note.
Yeah, it's very convenient. You can, if you get away, if you get rid of God, and then suddenly, like you said, man becomes no more important than a bug or a leaf on a tree, and that means that he can be manipulated without any moral consequences or consequences of conscience, manipulated by the power elite, and use them for whatever the elitists, you know, see fit. It's just very convenient. It's a means to an end is really what it is.
And, you know, they've been successful in their experiments, certainly in Europe, first with the Reign of Terror in France, which co-opted an otherwise pro-American French Revolution. I mean, the French people wanted to get in place some of the same, basic rights that America has. I mean, during our revolution, and the left co-opted it with the Reign of Terror and thus launched the world's first communist revolution. And they did it, of course, in the Soviet Union and in Nazi Germany.
Yep,
but they have not
yet
really been able to do it here, at least not yet. I mean, I think that one of the most earnest attempts recently, of course, is Obama with his Hope and Change. But, you know, so far they have not been able to institute it fully here. Why do you think?
Well, I think it's the proof under our noses that America was indeed founded upon biblical principles. The fact that they haven't been able to do it, since a lot of people think it really started in earnest, you know, in the 1930s with some of FDR's policies that were clearly, you know, not biblical in origins. John Dewey, you know, began to change the educational system in the 30s as well. So it's been going on for a long time, and it hasn't been successful. America has some real problems. It's not just with the people in Washington. It's with a lot of the people in America, too, where they have disregarded God's decrees and commandments in the Bible. But I think this this has been going on for a long time, but it's also evidence that there are just really strong Christian and biblical underpinnings. That's why it hasn't happened overnight. But it is happening. There is definitely an erosion.
Happening. It's the Judeo-Christian underpinnings have restrained us. And also, you know, institutions that emanate from that, freedom institutions like private property, which is the Old Testament is filled with the definition of private property. And also, you know, the separations of nations into sovereign states and, you know, the separation from the sacred from the profane. And, I mean, there's an intricate levels of separations all the way from the very first word, which is that God separated the heavens from the earth. They want to blur those separations. They want to make us into a collectivist entity where we become one gigantic international ant colony, you know, where there is no inequality, there is no difference. And, you know, this is something that I think the latest part of that's what the sexual revolution is all about, you know, removing the sacredness of the sexual act within marriage, which is very clearly biblical, and replacing that with this idea that anything goes, you know, whatever feels good is good.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as morality. It's all like whatever you want to do, and to be against that, somehow you're suppressed. There's something wrong with you.
Yeah, and you know, by getting rid of that, like you said, anything goes. People can do whatever they want to do, whatever their impulses lead them or whatever direction they can just do without any consequences or you know, feelings of inferiority or of having done something wrong.
Right. And, you know, they take advantage, of course, of the libertarian part of America, which does allow for a maximum amount of individual freedom, and that includes the freedom to sin, but they do not want to identify it as such, which is that, sure, you're free to do certain things. That doesn't make it good.
You're free to murder, but there's going to be consequences.
Exactly. You know, that's the hallmark of a moral society, one that stands up and identifies good and evil, that recognizes that some people are going to fall short, but that and protect their right to do it, but to try to put in place social constructs that make it, you know, less likely for people to do destructive behaviors and destructive things.
Mm-hmm.
That idea has been eroded in the name of individual rights, when in fact individual rights are there within the context of the biblical law. You know, you can know the biblical law, you can know what's right and wrong, you're then free to choose it or not choose it and deal with the consequences, but it's not a straitjacket. I mean, if anything, they're the ones who are putting us in a straitjacket.
Yeah.
It's actually quite liberating.
Yeah. And,
I mean, I know that there was...
Yeah. No, go ahead, Chuck.
No, I'm listening.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, people think that God's laws and his commandments that he gave in the Old Testament, they think that God is somehow being mean by taking good things away from good people. And it couldn't be further from the truth. God's laws are so that, and his commandments are so that people can live successful lives that are, you know, as free as possible from problems that can be avoided. God, you know, says not to do certain things, they're, he's not being mean. It's actually for our own good. I was just reading in the Old Testament book of Leviticus yesterday, and where he has the things that people that he wanted the children of Israel to eat and to not eat. And when he started looking at those, what he was doing is he was steering them away from things that carried harmful bacteria and germs, things that would make them sick and kill them. And God's moral laws is with the same intent.
That's right. That's right. I mean, and to make yourself a more holy people, to become more spiritual, to become closer to God, and to not fall away from God. Okay, my guest is Lorne Day. The book is America's War on God. Lorne, your book is available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. You can get the book by simply going to Amazon and putting in either Lorne's name, Lorne Day, or putting in the title of the book, America's War on God. Lauren, we only have a few minutes left, so I'd like to ask you something more current in the news here.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the war on God, what do you think of Donald Trump?
Well, he certainly, I have to be careful what I say here, because the thing is whatever I say against Donald Trump, and I'm not against Donald Trump, but if I say something that he's done, I'm probably guilty of it myself on some level. You know, he's not a perfect man. I don't know if Donald Trump, you know, is a professing Christian. I don't believe that he is. But, you know, I could be wrong. I don't know a person's heart. Only God knows a person's heart. You know, like me, he's done things wrong in his life. I don't know what his ultimate goals or anything are. I tend to support Donald Trump mostly because I think he's got the tools that could turn America around economically. And I don't think that he is an ideologue of the sort of Barack Obama, where he would wage war against a particular religion. Even though he says a lot of things against Islam, I think it's just because we know what Islam does when it goes into a non-Islamic country or even an Islamic country. It's just filled with violence and a horrible treatment of women and children. So I think he only speaks against Islam because we see what Islam has done around the world. But I don't think that he would wage a war against Jews and against Christians and against the Bible. So in that respect, I think he could be a good thing for America. Although I do not hold a lot of, I do not put a lot of faith in the political process in America anymore, just because it has become so corrupted. But I do think that he could be a positive influence on America instead of a negative one, the way Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and George Bush, you know, has been. I don't think. Of course, I don't know unless he gets elected and is in office. I don't think he's going to fall into some of the same things that these last three administrations have participated in. But, you know, only time will tell.
Yeah. No, I mean, I tend to be with you on that. I mean, he's certainly a departure from the same old, you know, Clinton, Bush, Obama, you know, slide into, you know, mediocrity and generally a diminution of America as a sovereign nation where we as individuals have a certain say in our government and in our own destinies. I mean, that was the American ideal. And regardless of Trump as a person, who I think is a very flawed messenger, and there's a lot unknown about him, and maybe we're projecting hope onto him, he is unleashing some very positive things. I mean, people say, well, he doesn't really talk about anything. The truth is he is talking about real things in a way that no one else ever has. He's talking about reestablishing our national borders and reestablishing economic policies that favor American workers and things that actually are very positive to hear articulated where they had never been articulated before. Anyway, Lauren, again, your book is America's War on God. It's available at Amazon. Would you like to just quick, we're wrapping up, so please give us a quick comment about the book again.
Yeah, I would just like to say the whole message of the book is to turn people towards the Bible and the God of the Bible. And I believe that those two things are the only hope that America has for really turning things around, even apart from Donald Trump or any other person. So I hope that people will get the book, they will see the evidences for Christianity, and they will see the non-evidences for the alternative, which is Darwinistic evolution. And I hope that they will read the book and that they will come to the same conclusion that I've come to after 36 years as a Christian and a follower of Jesus Christ. So that is my hope.
All right, Lauren. Thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you, Chuck, for having me on today.
All right, my pleasure.
Thanks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right.